Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's February 28th, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois, and we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator, located in Lexington. In agricultural news, sources say a farm bill deal could be unveiled tomorrow. The Democratic candidates for president are threatening to pull out of NAFTA if elected. And the Humane Society has sued the federal government. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. And speaking of the federal government, later in this half hour, we'll hear from a 25-year veteran of the Illinois Farm Bureau who in the year 2004 went, quote, to the dark side and began to work on behalf of agriculture inside the United States Environmental Protection Agency. Hey, don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL AM 580, public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby March wheat down $1.11 at $11.69. The May futures at $11.65, a settlement price 85 cents lower. And July contract at $10.57, down 88 cents. In the face of that overwhelming downside, the corn futures managed an 18 and a quarter cent gain at 543 and a quarter in the March. May futures at 556 and a quarter, up 18 and a quarter. And July at $5.67 and three quarters, up 17 and three quarters. December corn futures up 12 cents today at $5.65 and one half. March soybean futures up 39 and a half cents, $14.98 and a half settlement price, the high at $15 even. May futures 15.12 and a half, up 37 and a quarter. And July at 15.23 and three quarters, up 35 cents. November soybeans, $14.24, 17 higher. March bean meal at $373.50, up $7.60. The March bean oil at $66.45, up $1.98. Fab live cattle at $93.55, 32 and a half higher. The March contract at $104.65, down 45 on the afternoon. And the April lean hogs at $61.25, finished 27 and a half cents higher per hundredweight. That all at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. Outside markets now. This is the way futures finished in the crude oil or are trading now in the crude oil at 102.63. They're up 2.99 for the day. The May futures at 101.80, up 2.42. The CRB index at 413.42. That's up 7.98. And the U.S. dollar at 73.724 is down 0.498. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at this hour trading at 12,624. It's just about 70 points lower on the afternoon. The March gold at $964.50, up $6.30 for the afternoon. Taking a look at what's been happening in the world of weather tonight, the forecast from our own Mike Solis says that in the north it'll be cloudy. There'll be some areas of snow. In central sections, cloudy. Some snow showers this evening. They'll mix and then change over to rain. In the south, mostly cloudy. Some scattered showers. A few areas of drizzle. Lows will range from 23 in northern Indiana to 38 in the far south. Friday, mostly cloudy skies in Illinois. Areas of light rain and snow ending early. And then in northern Indiana, snow showers, a few flurries. In central and southern Indiana, scattered showers and drizzle. That'll diminish during the afternoon. Highs will range, says Mike Sola, from 32 in the northwestern parts of Illinois to 55 in the far southern part of Illinois. Here are the highlights for the couple weekend days. Soil moisture remains abundant in all corners of Illinois and Indiana. Excessive moisture is reported, though in many areas, specifically in east central Illinois and northern sections of both states. Tonight and tomorrow's clipper system will bring about 4 inches of fresh snow near the Wisconsin border with lesser amounts to the south. Liquid equivalent amounts of precipitation are expected to range between a tenth of an inch in the south to a quarter of an inch in the north. A stronger system is forecast for early next week, though uncertainty about its track still exists. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL AM 580.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Lernard Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Lernard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I am Todd Gleason. We're joined now by ADM Grain Group's own Dan Zwicker to take a look at the agricultural markets. He's in, I think, Nashville, Tennessee. You get around anymore, Dan?
Yeah, got a couple more weeks, and then I'm back in Decatur for a long time, I guess, when the farmers get busy in the field. But I got this week here, Nashville, Tennessee, and then a couple more weeks of meetings, and then it's pretty well wound down for the year.
What are the rest of your schedule look like? Where are you headed?
Well, I guess the beef house on Tuesday, ain't I?
Yeah, well, yeah. I forgot about that. I guess you are headed to the beef house for our all-day Ag Outlook meeting.
I see Danville, Illinois on my calendar, so yeah. I figured that's probably the beef house.
Yeah, the beef house in Covington, Indiana, that's right.
I guess I'll get back Sunday here from Nashville and be in the office there on Monday to get ready for the beef house event.
You know, that should be a darn good event. Dave Dickey did a heck of a job. He's got you and the rest of the folks that we have on the air with us, for the most part, are along all day long. And Dan Bossy will be there, Glenn Ring, some of the folks that write some pretty influential newsletters in the business. It should be fun to see what they have to say, I would think.
It'll be a good meeting to go get good and confused at.
Well, let's talk about the confusion. Maybe start with the Minneapolis Grain Exchange, where it finally looks like things have fallen apart. And I did see on a note that there was a 30-cent drop in the Gulf basis today for wheat as well.
Well, yeah, the wheat market's kind of all by itself over here with these wide trading ranges. Basis levels are dropping simply because the cash trade don't even know they're scared to death to buy anything because they can't hedge anything off. You don't know where your field's going to be at. So we're seeing basis levels widen not only at the Gulf but at the milling plant to terminal elevators. So a lot of that is the uncertainty on price, not knowing whether or not what level you can be filled at. So, you know, anybody that's buying grain from the farmer or even an elevator or even maybe a commercial grain company, they feel an uncomfort level of trying to get that thing hedged off. So that's why we're seeing widening basis levels. As far as the basis levels, in one sense, is doesn't really mean a whole lot because there's not a lot. There's not hardly any wheat to ship out. So, I mean, of this good quality spring wheat, there just isn't anything around. And that, of course, that's why we're trading the levels that we're trading and the volatility that we're trading. And, of course, and that spills on over into your other the wheat varieties. Still there?
Yeah, I am still here. Let's move over from that to the corn market very quickly and talk about that. We've got some new contract highs to talk about in corn.
I'm just looking at my monthly charts, and I had a longstanding price objective on December corn to hit 568. I see here today that we've come within a couple pennies of that. The next price objective I see here, now this is just on the monthly chart that I'm using, would be then 630. So we're closing in on this 568. We'll see how the market performs around this 568 level, whether or not that kind of wants to offer resistance or whether or not we'll just plow through that. Then on a monthly December futures chart, the next upside objective would be right at 630.
Yeah, the new contract high, I think, is at 567 in the December corn futures. That would be electronic trade. Pit trade, as you said, went to within a couple cents of the high at $5.66. Can we move towards the $6 level now?
Well, there's a lot of things that go into the mix. But like I told Dave this morning, there's two things that I've watched all along here, and as long as they indicate higher commodities. You stay with the trend, and that is energy prices and the value of the dollar. And, of course, both of those commodities have made big moves here now over the past couple of days. We saw crude oil slice through this $100 mark now with some vengeance and some volume. I think technicians now will be looking at a move up to around 115, and we'll kind of go from there. But I think that'll be the next price objective on crude oil now that we've cleared the $100 mark. The other is the value of the dollar. During the month of November, December, and even January, it did look like maybe the dollar was going to try to make a stand. But after the comments made by the bank chief here, Congress here the past couple days, the dollar has broken into new lows. So that tees up long-term weakness yet to see here in the dollar. And I think as long as you have energy prices rising, that helps out ag commodities in the sense as that makes renewable fuel values higher priced. And then as long as the dollar continues to weaken, that's going to keep the U.S. The first place to buy grain because it is the cheapest place to buy grain. So that will keep our export demand intact. So as long as those two key elements are in play, you can probably pick about any number you want to pick on the upside, I think, is a possibility. But, you know, you have to take 1 week at a time and, you know, 1 month at a time also.
We're almost to the time where crop insurance will be finished and we'll have prices in for that. What are you telling farmers at this point, given that we've got a pretty good idea now what the final price for corn and soybeans will be?
Well, yeah, you have an idea what the price is, but this big increase in volatility here that we're seeing here in the last 5 days of the month is not a good sign that the premiums are going to go down any. If anything, this volatility here in the last 5 days of the month is going to, I think, ratchet up a lot of these premium levels beyond what people were talking about a week or two ago. I think, you know, farmers still have to make their own individual decision. There's a lot of profit margin here. Some farmers have decided that they may go ahead and absorb their own risk, given that there's a lot of profit increase in profit margins. But then, on the other hand, if you're a farmer that have bought new machinery, you're paying high dollar cash rent, you don't have as much profit margin. So then you may look at using insurance products to kind of protect some of that catastrophic type losses if something would happen. So I think crop insurance is still an individual producer decision. I think in today's volatility, not only in the market place, but in weather volatility, you know, I think there's an argument and a case to be made that they need to have at least a moderate size type policy underneath them.
And Dan, we'll appreciate the time you took today and look forward to seeing you on Tuesday of next week.
Very well.
All right. Thanks much. That's Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Joins us on the Closing Market Report each and every Thursday afternoon.
Be sure to mark your calendars for March 4th, the date of our all-day Agricultural Outlook meeting. We'll be at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. You won't want to miss our nationally acclaimed lineup, including Dan Bossi and Glenn Ring. And we've got sessions on spring weather, estate planning, crop insurance, and corn and soybeans basis and futures. Registration on March 4th begins at 8:15 a.m. Eastern Time. That's 7:15 a.m. Central. Cost is just $13. The 2008 All-Day Agricultural Outlook meeting is made possible with support from Cargill, the Archer Daniels Midland Company, and the Andersons.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. 866-837-9027. The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In a moment or two, Dave Dickey, Director of Ag Programming at the WILL radio stations, will join us with today's look at the agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report.
In agricultural news, sources say that Senate Finance Committee Chairman Max Baucus and House Ways and Means Chairman Charlie Rangel could tomorrow unveil a $10 billion package of new revenue raisers for the Farm Bill. Yesterday, the Bush administration reiterated it wants Farm Bill reform in exchange for increased spending. Deputy USDA Secretary Chuck Connor.
You know, we've also said that whether it's the $6 billion number from the earlier version or the $10 billion number, the key point we're also looking at is not only how it's paid for, but the number of reforms, you know, contained in the bill that go along with that particular spending level.
Meanwhile, House Agriculture Committee Chairman Colin Peterson is looking to find a way to squeeze a permanent disaster aid program into the budget for the next Farm Bill. Peterson's plan is to establish a program on top of crop insurance that farmers could sign up for by agreeing to a lower direct payment. USDA has been working on a similar approach. Business groups yesterday expressed alarm over a threat by Democrat presidential candidates Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton to pull the U.S. out of the North America Free Trade Agreement unless Mexico and Canada are willing to renegotiate the pact. The National Association of Manufacturers say opting out of the 14-year pact would be a disaster for American jobs. Officials at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce called the comments troubling, but also noted they were directed to Ohio voters who blame NAFTA for much of the state's economic woes. The Humane Society of the U.S. yesterday sued the federal government, saying a USDA rule change approved last July allows downer cattle into the food supply. The suit charges that under the rule change, cows that fell down after an initial veterinarian inspection but appeared otherwise healthy could be slaughtered. Meanwhile, lawmakers are now considering whether to subpoena the head of Hallmark Westmart Meat Packing Company after he failed to appear yesterday before a House panel. Company officials say Hallmark Westland CEO Steve Mendel has no comment about a subpoena possibility. Video taken by the Humane Society showed Hallmark Westland employees forcing downer cattle into the food chain. And the House yesterday passed a bill that would repeal $18 billion in tax breaks for big oil companies. The bill would also extend tax breaks for producing energy from wind, solar, geothermal, cellulosic ethanol, biofuels, and other renewable sources. The White House has threatened a veto on the grounds it unfairly targets the oil industry. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL, public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, inviting you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find details of next Tuesday's all-day Ag Outlook meeting over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Now up next, you know, there's been a long and contentious relationship between American farmers and the United States Environmental Protection Agency. And as the direct influence of US EPA has grown on the farm, measures have been taken to assure that agency has a better understanding of agriculture. U.S. EPA is tasked with protecting human health and the environment. The agency opened its doors December the 2nd of 1970. It deploys public policy to protect human health and the nation's natural resources, the air, the water, and the land. It is a mission that has put the agency at odds with private property owners and their rights many times, Farmers have had difficulty balancing the regulations put forth by U.S. EPA and their own fierce independence. In the mid-1990s, the development of GMO seed technology put the agency even closer to the farmer and his business. U.S. EPA not only had regulatory authority over the land and water producers owned, but also the GMO seeds they were planting. It was a decade later when a 25-year veteran of the Illinois Farm Bureau moved to Washington, D.C. to become U.S. EPA counselor to the administrator for agricultural policy. John Scholl says his job comes in two parts. The first is to make sure new policy decisions are mindful of agriculture.
The second general part of what I do really is outreach. Clearly, the relationship between agriculture and EPA over the years has been pretty contentious. And my boss, Mike Levitt first, and now Steve Johnson, and certainly I have a strong feeling that we can make that a much more positive relationship. We can have a much more collaborative relationship with agriculture. So working with the agricultural organizations, working with USDA, trying to find those areas where we have agreement, where we can build, where we can address in a positive way environmental issues, that outreach is a very important part of what I do in my current job.
This outreach, says the University of Illinois graduate, comes in the form of helping people in the agency understand the practical impacts decisions made in Washington have on the farm. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
On a Thursday afternoon, time to look at the cash grain market. Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, now joins us. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
What do you make of the market today?
Well, kind of another exciting time here, up to some new levels again. Sometimes kind of hard to explain. I know some of the news out this morning was, with the talk about ethanol, changing some of the ethanol tariffs and rules and that, and that seemed to actually get the market excited to the upside instead of the other way, but... not much going on in the cash side of the market, pretty quiet. We have seen the bean processors come in and pop in and buy some stuff, but not really change basis for an extended period of time. I think some of the exporters, too, we are seeing some good exports continue on the beans. Corn's just been pretty steady, and one thing that is going on here is we're coming into deliveries on the March, and we'll see this basis roll to the May month, which you always got to look at that and see what the spread is and, you know, kind of see what the basis is actually doing. You got a 13-cent spread from March to May, for example, on corn. So, you know, a 20 under basis, the March versus 33 under the May is really the same thing. So.
And what are your bids there for the day?
Cash corn at 513, new crop 510. Beans, $14.47. New crop, $13.69.
Anything else to add before I let you go?
No, I don't think so.
All right. Thanks much, Bill.
Thanks.
Bill Mayer is with Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois. On Thursdays, he helps us take a look at what's been happening in the world of the cash grain market. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. In 2 minutes, we'll talk with Peter Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, about the weather right here in the Midwest, around the nation, and around the globe.
It's National Chili Day. There are several theories on where chili began, among them that cowboys invented chili while driving cattle. Supposedly, cooks planted oregano, chilies, and onions among patches of mesquite to protect them from foraging cattle. The next time they passed the same trail, they'd collect the ingredients, add beef, and make a dish called Trail Drive Chili. Perhaps the earliest mention of the dish, although not by name, was by J.C. Clopper, who in 1828 noted how poor people cut meat they could afford into a kind of hash. with nearly as many pieces of pepper as there were pieces of meat. On this day in agricultural history in 1835, at the DuPont Corporation, Dr. Wallace Hume Carruthers invented nylon. A patent was issued in 1837, and nylon stockings soon followed. Nylon has also been used in products as varied as tires to blood plasma filters. Carruthers also invented neoprene, a synthetic rubber that's today often used in horse breast collars. And speaking of horses, in 1979, Mr. Ed the Talking Horse died. The pilot show, entitled The Wonderful World of Wilbur Pope, was produced by George Burns, but it was never broadcast. TV bosses, however, thought it could be a successful TV show with a few changes. The TV series Mr. Ed first became a syndicated show on January 5th of 1961. And that's this day in agricultural history.
I'm Todd Gleason. This is the Closing Market Report. Time to take a look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural weather. On the line with us this afternoon, Pete Levitt. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the Midwestern weather first.
Well, more action in store for the Midwest, as if we haven't had enough this season. We've got some snow moving across central Iowa today on the lead edge of a what we call a warm frontal type system, trying to bring some milder air in. That snow will move eastward across the Mississippi River this evening and into Illinois. It'll come across mostly the northern half of the state tonight and start ending from west to east tomorrow morning. Doesn't look like much, and it'll probably mix with some rain, certainly from the broadcast area here around the Champaign-Urbana area southward, but I think it'll be mostly snow up north, another snowy day there. However, 1 to 3 inches, not a big deal on this storm. That clears out and the gets a little colder. That'll be on Friday night and Saturday. Sunday, cloudiness again, another storm system coming along. This one a little bit more potent, and this will start to move in late Sunday, Sunday night, continue through the night into Monday, and that one looks like it will be a heavy precipitation producer for much of the region. We're going to see some pretty good amounts, melted amounts, probably in excess of an inch in central and southern parts of the state. The only good news is it'll probably be rain downstate, but it'll be rain mixing with and then changing to snow up north, so another snowstorm. That clears out. We get colder weather on Tuesday and Wednesday, and then we're looking at some more weather the following Friday. So the question is, why do we keep getting these things? And what you're seeing is an example of what meteorology we call persistence in a weather pattern. We talked about it last week, and here it is again, and it's going to continue.
I was going to ask you about this persistence in the weather pattern. As we heat up and we get into the spring, does this give you cause for concern about the severe weather that might come along with warmer temperatures?
That's absolutely the case this time, especially an early severe weather season we may see in March with this, but moving right on into the late March period until this season ends. The reason is we have a very energetic jet stream, which is unusually far south for the season. It's across a southern tier of states. That lets cold air come south, and then we get these little ripples in the jet, brings up warm air ahead with cold air behind, strong fronts, good moisture flow. All of that contributes to severe local storms, and I think we are going to have a very active severe storm season. Oh, I'd say from the central plains right on eastward into the Midwest, and we're just going to have to play it day by day.
Just a good reminder for folks to get themselves geared up for their emergency plans in the case that tornadoes or other events might strike their local areas. A very quick look, and we've got maybe 35 or 40 seconds, at South America, please.
Yeah, in South America, they finally had some dry weather again in southern Brazil, and sure enough, as soon as it dries out, they complain about it being a bit too dry and unseasonably dry. It's been very active farther north. However, we've got rain coming this week up into southern Brazil. It'll be coming up through eastern Argentina, so that'll put the moisture back in step. I don't think weather patterns there have been too bad. They've had the good moisture. They have not had excessive heat. And those two are what you need in summertime.
Thanks much. Mm-hmm. That's Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens on Thursday afternoons. You have a good afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.